arahato samma sambuddhassa namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa aparuta de sangamattassa tavaraye sorabandha bhamunchantu sadang. So this evening is the observance night, and we've all renewed our precept responsibilities. So this is a sense of a sangha, those who practice the Dhamma. And so that's the individual human beings, you and I. And this brings us back to the reality of being a human individual, and or an entity, a conscious entity, living on this planet, in this universe. And so then we identify with the conditions, so we become a person. And so we become, we get name and identify with the body and the emotional habits and the conditioning of the mind. So in taking refuge in the Sangha, the Sanghang Tenangachami, this isn't a personal thing. It's not a refuge in any conventional form, in fact. It's a refuge in that awareness, knowing things as they are, as an individual entity. And so we're investigating and awakening to the way things are as they really are in terms of the Dhamma. So the Buddha is the awakened consciousness, being able to awaken and be fully present to the Dhamma the way it is, as an individual entity, the Sangha. The Sangha are a group of people, but practicing in this way. So Sangha is no longer need be made into some kind of personal identity. But like we do that, everything we touch gets tainted with our loves and hates and preferences and likes and dislikes. Because that comes out of the ignorance of not seeing things as they are, then we just react to the forms, the conditions that we experience through the senses, through consciousness in this universe. So Sangha also implies community. You know, it's generally used in as a, like for a community, for a group, rather than individual. So the purity of the Sangha is not identifying with monasticism or particular conventional forms, traditional Sanghas, but in being able to follow the teachings of the Buddha or reflect from that point of awareness. And then the Dhamma pointing to the way things are. And so this discerning ability, the Butoh is the wisdom, knowing the truth of the way it is. All conditions are impermanent. They have the three characteristics of that are common to all forms, all conditions, all phenomena, which is anicca, dukkha, anatta. To discern takes this awareness, trusting in this awareness, in this intuitive, awakened attentiveness to the present, to be able to receive the present conditions for what they are. Receive them and know them, discern them in terms of, say, sabbe sankhara anicca, all conditions are impermanent. Not as a thought, not as a, because we tend to do this sometimes intellectually, and then we think we understand, but we don't. As long as we think, we don't really, as long as we have to label and identify with words, label things, then we make them more than what they are. So discerning isn't a language, it's an ability, natural ability, through awareness. Discerning, or panya, sati sampachanya, sati panya. But we're very conditioned to always want to label things and put more onto everything, more than what it really is, and make everything quite personal. So Sangha life becomes very personal, or being a Buddhist monk, Buddhist nun, very personal experience. Everything, our sila becomes personal, our practice becomes, we make it very personal, my practice, and so forth. So this is because we think of the language and the habit of always grasping, and using some way of adding more to the moment than what is, than the way it is here and now. So when we contemplate anicca, it's not a projection of impermanence, an intellectual projection of impermanence onto experience, but a way of just observing all conditions are that way. You can find a condition that is different, come and tell me. That means all conditions, whether they're, you know, refined or coarse, or good or bad, you know, whether they're mental or physical. So discernment then allows us to see things in terms of Dhamma rather than in terms of liking, disliking, approving, disapproving, wanting, not wanting. Because then liking, disliking, approving, disapproving is seen in terms of Dhamma. It's a condition we create that arises and ceases. So to be able to do this, to take real refuge in Buddha Dhamma Sangha, then means not in trying to make yourself into something or other, not trying to, well, many of us have started out in monasticism trying to make ourselves into, you know, ideal monks, nuns, trying to be the perfect bhikkhu and things like this, doing everything right and obeying all the rules and trying to make ourselves into what an ideal of what we hold as a monk or a nun. But then the result of that is never liberation. It can be kind of fun for a while, and we can, at times just hate it, you know, feel really put out by always having to, you know, worry about what we look like and, you know, being conscious of our identity, trying to be exemplary models for everybody, and on like that, which can be absolute pain in the neck. You know, because you can't ever, you know, it's all maybe out of good intention, but it's still based on avicca, or ignorance, and the self-view. So that's why this emphasis on awakeness and recognizing it. Like awakeness or sati has no boundary. Like when we awaken, when we're just present here and now, we're not defining anything. We're just opening. So it's an imminent ability to receive this moment and all that arises and ceases in it. So it has no form in itself, sati, awareness, intuitive awareness. It's the way we can, and it's the way of liberation. It's through this awareness that we realize liberation. As soon as we create a form or put limits on experience, then we're creating conditioned phenomena. So the interpretations of self, me and mine, and the self-view always is a limitation, isn't it? It's putting a boundary on this moment. It's mine, it's what I feel, it's what I think, it's my practice, and so forth. And that puts me into the limited form of me. But in sati, sampatanya, it's formless. And that's where we get confused because we aren't used to that. We're used to identifying or naming or putting our attention into things or objects or forms of some sort, or creating them, projecting them out onto the world around us. When we practice samadhi, then we tend to choose a form of some sort. So the samadhi concentration on an object. So that means that we decide we're going to concentrate on this or that, on the breath or on the kasina or on the candle flame or on the mantra or whatever. And that limits, boundaries. And that way we can concentrate attention onto an object. So it's very important to know the difference between sati and samadhi, because I think that's quite an insight when you really know the difference, because so many times meditation techniques are about samadhi. You know, putting limitation, putting boundaries, techniques, all these forms that we choose or we attach to, and through that then we can develop concentrated attention on a limited form of some sort. Now, I remember when I first started meditating, I didn't know the difference. Just I was doing samadhi practices all the time because I didn't recognize the power of awareness. I went along with the techniques that the teachers gave me and my own interpretations of scripture and so forth, so that this was what I had at the time, where my mind was conditioned through my background, my education. So then, I used to have, to try to be mindful. The ideal was to be mindful. These were the words, generally, they use in the Theravada tradition. Must be mindful, try to be mindful, and so forth. So we conceive mindfulness in some way and then try to become that. So we create some kind of idea of what mindfulness is, and then we try to become that image. Now I remember, you know, starting out with meditation technique, Mahasi Sayadaw style in Wat Mahathat in Bangkok. So I got the impression that to be mindful, you had to do everything in slow motion. Everything was very kind of very done in a very slow way. And then thinking that if you couldn't do it in this very precise, strong technique, then you couldn't really be mindful. You had to be aware of each movement of your foot and when you were walking and on like this. So, but I found this led to a an experience of concentration, because it's a technique that if one attaches to the technique itself, one becomes concentrated through it. Then attaching to the tranquility that comes through concentration made me feel, well, if I don't, you know, I've got to always, in order to be mindful and be peaceful and tranquil, I need to control everything. I need to put limits on everything. I need to shut the world out. And I need to, do everything in slow motion. I need to, you know, have complete control over the environment so that I can do this technique. And then when I tried to do that, of course, I was always being frustrated because the world doesn't allow it. You know, you always have to go to a special place that supports such kind of condition. I remember, you know, I ordained in the Nong Khai in the Northeast, and then going to Bangkok at the time of the New Year to get a visa to stay in Thailand. You know, everybody said, "Oh, you can't practice in Bangkok. You know, you can't be mindful in Bangkok." So that seemed to me pretty limited, actually, to think that the Buddha's message depended on an exaggerated style of doing everything, and that certain places were totally inimical to awareness. Well, that's how I interpreted it anyway. So then, beginning to, you know, question, what is sati, awareness? And then, following year, I became a bhikkhu and went to stay with Ajahn Chah. Now, his way of wasn't so kind of involved with technique as being aware in daily life. So the emphasis was on awareness in the life of the monastic, of the monastery, being a monk in the monastery. And awareness, the habit tendency, the way that I tended to interpret scriptural teaching, or even Lungpa Cha with my Western intellect, always limited it, isn't it? The way I would interpret even Lungpa Cha's teaching, or reading the scripture, the suttas. Because as long as I projected onto, tried to figure it out, tried to analyze it, tried to define it and fix it with words, then that brought into action, into the moment, my intellectual habits. But I began to recognize that I'm letting go of that trusting in the awareness before the intellect arises, before the conditioning of the mind comes into consciousness. So that's where I developed this meditation on doubt, on uncertainty, not knowing, because the my personality wants to know everything, wants to analyze and figure everything out. It likes to know everything and have confidence through the illusion that I know about everything. I've figured it all out. Over the years, then, the development of awareness comes through recognition of the cessation of conditions in this present moment. And when I let everything just be what it is in this moment, when I'm not trying to manipulate it and according to, trying to project something onto it, add something to it, either through, liking it or trying to get rid of it through aversion, when I trust in the awareness, then that receives that which is present here now, both in terms of the sense experience of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, but also on the emotional thinking level, the sanya, sankara conditioning. So awareness then isn't a creation. You can't become aware. You're trying to be mindful is the very act of trying means that you're not. So it's an imminent act of recognizing this way. Don't conceive it, don't try to figure it out with words, because then you're trying to put limits. The language always limits everything. Language itself is a limitation. Thinking is a limitation. So this intuitive awareness is the refuge. Awakened attention in the present, where that which is present, an emotional feeling or mood or thoughts or memories, through the sense, through the objects of sense, whatever they are, the way they are. And this reflection on the way it is putting it in a way that we see it in terms of Dhamma. All that arises ceases. All Dhamma is anatta, not self. With awareness, there's no self. When I'm heedless, then I become a personality. I attach to my personality, and I project from there, what I like and don't like, what I approve of and or disapprove of. Well, my personality is like that. It's based on ignorance. So it's a personality that has definite likes and dislikes, preferences, it has wants and desires and all kinds of very complicated, it sometimes wants things and then doesn't want them, and likes and then it doesn't like anymore, and it's very changeable. My personality goes up and down according to experience. If I'm being praised and everything's going great, then I'm happy as a person. Everything's falling apart. If people are angry with me, then I feel depressed and despairing as a person. So this personality is to be recognized. I'm not trying to get rid of a personality, I'm not trying to annihilate it, but to recognize it And so this is where the awareness is the way, because whatever you're feeling, whether you're feeling high or, you know, ecstatic or depressed or bored or full of hope or full of despair or full of inspiration, full of doubt, there's an awareness of that. You know, I feel doubt. Should I stay in the robe or should I not? And so there's an awareness that you aren't sure what you're going to do. Well, that awareness, you know, begin to recognize this awareness, which you can't object, you can't see it. You know, it's not like doubt is definitely something you can notice when you feel, when I'm feeling uncertain and insecure. You know, I know that I'm feeling this way, feeling ill at ease or insecure like this, or angry or greedy or confused. These are states of mind that one knows and recognizes. But that which knows, that which recognizes, you see, isn't, you can't, when you try to figure it out, you just get tangled up with, you know, in your, with your thoughts and ideas, and what are various views of others. So this kind of inquiry, noticing, feeling confused, or doubt, or uncertainty, or happy, or sad, or inspired, or disillusioned is like this. Now, in the conventional world, then, you know, the conventions we're using, this Theravada style, Thai forest tradition, is a convention. So it's a limitation in itself, isn't it? Like Vinaya definitely limits behavior. Limitation on action, speech, and that. So that's a conventional form. But it's not meant to be a conditioning process. It's not meant to be an identity or an attachment. But it's for one thing, it simplifies. I find, you know, monastic life much more simple than what I remember when I was a layman, which is so long ago. Was I ever a layman? Most of you, that's ancient history. When I was a layman, you weren't born yet. Many of you. So in the forms we're using, they're always for the here and now, not for, you know, like sometimes I used to get wound up by the fact that I'm in an ancient tradition, you know, and that, and then, you know, the Thai forest tradition, and then you've got, you know, the loyalty to the tradition, and uphold the tradition, and all very good things, kind of altruistic attitudes towards the tradition, without realizing what I was doing. You know, so I'd get, you know, I'd get guilt-ridden if I didn't feel I was, you know, the perfect monk, represented always as the kind of role model or the prototype for what a good Theravada and Thai forest tradition monk should be. you know, feeling I was letting down. The personality could easily, you know, be very tyrannical. And then, you know, when you're alone with yourself, then all kinds of resentments come up, and even when you're not alone with yourself. But in meditation sometimes, where you go off for a month or 3 months or 6 months for self-retreats, you know, and you're just with yourself, and then the repressed resentments, anger, and frustration can obsess the mind. So we can make tradition and these noble altruistic ideals, attachment to them, they become personal, then they become counterproductive. They destroy us. So that's where the importance is in this awakenness, not in an idealizing of tradition, or how one should be, or how to, you know, trying to idealize the monk or the nun or the teacher or the tradition or the, you know, the sect or the monastery. Because these are forms. They're forms, they can be used for awareness, or if we just cling to them, then they kill us. They destroy us. So that's where this awakenedness is. So that's why even people disrobe and out of just they've dedicated years to practice and somehow, you know, done all the right things and still feel, you know, haven't gotten anywhere, can't do it. You know, these kind of reactions are a sign of, you know, of still the self-view is what one is operating from. Like when you say, wake up, I'm not saying, well, in the future, if you practice awareness, you wake up. I never say that. If you really work hard, devote your life, you know, stay a monk or a nun your whole life, and you'll have a chance to wake up during that time, maybe. Now notice that it's always this sense of ahipasiko, here and now, wake up here and now, you know. Now is the time, not practice hard to wake up next year or the next 5 years. As long as you think that and hold that as your view, then you're conceiving it as some kind of attainment that you get through some kind of meditation practice. And so you're creating an idea of meditation, practice, yourself, your ability, or lack of ability, and the whole thing is based on, not on waking up, but on attachment to how things should or shouldn't be, views and opinions, habits, emotional habits, and personal views and opinions. Now, wake up is, you know, it's simple, isn't it? It's certainly the most simple teaching, you know, it's the most direct. It's here and now, and it is the path of liberation. And so, because we're so clever, you know, we can understand it, you know, and get the idea of it. But to trust in it, this is where I see the big lack in people, is a lack of trust. They get the idea, they can understand the theory. But to really trust that moment now, to recognize it and value that. Now that takes patience, doesn't it? Just to bear with the way it is, with the way you're feeling, your own frustration or doubt or confusion around this, what I'm saying, or disagreement or whatever going on in you right now. Because then when I talk like this, then people say, well, you know, you always have to do this first and get the jhanas, and then go do the, then you do the vipassana, and you've got to get a level of concentration in order to, and they go on like that. So then, you know, they've got views and opinions. I'm not saying their views are wrong or anything. But a view is a view, you know, it's a condition. Whether you take it out of the scripture or out of your own mind or whatever, it's still a view, is a condition that arises and ceases. The sense of yourself, you know, as a self-worth, as a person, or that, the way we conceive ourselves. You know, so I is to listen to the way I conceive myself as a person. I used to do this a lot, you know, just to hear myself, creating myself, what I think I am. You know, there's nothing, you know, just thinking it out. I'm, you know, taking very kind of, you know, I am a human being, fairly uncontroversial identity. I'm a human being. That doesn't arouse any great feelings in me. I am a male. That has a little more something to it. There's a little more emotion in that one. Little that brings up more, something more than the kind of bland indifference to I am a human being. Then I am a real man. Then that, or a he man, or I'm not very much of a man. And then that goes into all kinds of proliferations, and doubts and uncertainties. I am an American. I don't know what I am anymore on nationality, because I'm both British now and American. And so when people ask, I usually say I'm American, because that's, I guess, your basic identity is the one you tend to use in life. But then that also, as you know, Americans are hated the world over. So it's not very wise to go around announcing it. Anyway, I don't look like an American anymore, do I? I am a bhikkhu. I am a senior. I am a Mahatera. I'm a abbot of monastery. I'm a meditation master. I am there's a lot of self-disparagement. My personality tends to create myself with an emphasis on what's wrong with me. So I used to go on how you shouldn't think those thoughts. You shouldn't be so selfish. You should be more considerate. You should be more loving. You shouldn't think bad thoughts. You should love everybody. Instead, you hate people most of the time. You shouldn't get jealous. jealousy is disgusting, and you shouldn't be frightened of things. A man is fearless, you know, a he-man is fearless. Oh, wimp that I am, you know, these wimpy feelings about, oh, I couldn't bear that, or I couldn't hope nothing terrible happens to me because I don't know if I could deal with it, and the kind of anxious me, the worried, the fretting, the fear of failure, and all that. So listening to it, listening to it in a way of, non, of just getting to know it, not in terms of judging it. You know, so whether it's a boastful, confident, arrogant me, or the wimpy, frightened, inferior me, these are, I'm adding these kind of values to it. But it's to recognize, because the refuge is in the awareness of it. That's a creation. Whatever I think I am, that's a creation that I'm creating that. I create myself in terms of attachment to memories, ideals, views, opinions. So I can observe that. That observing isn't, you know, I can't observe the observer. I have to be that. I have to rest in that. I have to totally trust, surrender to this awareness. So by, and it doesn't mean I'm trying to even change my personality or habits, just knowing it. Once you know your personality and your emotional habits for what they are, not in terms of values, whether they're good or bad or mature or childish or should or shouldn't. Once you just recognize them in terms of when they arise, you know them in terms of what arises ceases, they are what they are. That then is not, that's not a criticism or a judgment on them. It's just discerning conditioned phenomena like this. That knowing, that direct knowing then doesn't attach. You know, we attach out of not knowing things. So you know, when we come out of ignorance, then we're always kind of manipulating our minds and trying to control everything out of fear and desire and habit. So then the awareness is like this. It's no boundary. If I try to figure it out, then I make boundaries again. Maybe it has boundaries. but so it's an intuitive kind of knowing rather than an intellectual definition of it. And this is where it takes this trust in this awareness. You know, and valuing it, really appreciating, treasuring this. This is the jewel. This is the beauty of our humanity. It's just this. It's so simple, so direct, so immediate, and available to all of us. It's not an attainment, in other words. It's not through, you know, trying to attain it. The more you try to get it, the you're coming from a delusion again. You're conceiving it and then trying to make yourself get something you've conceived of. So that's the frustrating part, isn't it, of a spiritual path, because you can't really grasp it. And no matter how, you know, how well your intentions might be, you know, you're still, if you don't break through the basic delusion, then after years of commitment and practice, you know, you'll still feel, well, I can't do it, because the basic illusion has never been, you know, is still where you're operating from the sense of my practice, me and mine. And that's why, you know, really investigate that which is aware of me. Now it's quite simple, because me and mine is, I think it, and this is me and this is mine, and I like and I don't like, and I listen to it. Whatever I'm feeling, you know, if I'm feeling discouraged or angry or fed up or whatever, I listen to it. I'm not afraid. I'm not trying to be, you know, the perfect monk that has only loving thoughts for everything all the time. I'm willing to listen to what they call the dark side, to the angry, discontented, complaining conditions that arise. Listening to them, but not judging them. They are what they are. And then by questioning that which is aware, say, of, if you feel doubt, for example, that which is aware of uncertainty, insecurity. You know, so you begin to just question, what is it that which is aware, and the emotional feeling of doubt in the present? Should I or shouldn't I? I don't know what to do. And then the awareness of that. That awareness, you know, you know, it's real. It's reality. The condition of uncertainty comes and goes and changes according to circumstances. Feeling angry or upset or jealous or frightened or confused. These conditions come and go. You know, they depend on conditions, other conditions. You know, so everything's in this changing process of change and movement, flux, so that you just can't make yourself feel happy and that all the time, because the conditions for happiness aren't present. Sometimes they're not present at all. Sometimes the conditions for sadness, misery are present. But the awareness is the stable point, that which is, you know, doesn't change. It's not a changing, it's not a creation. It's not dependent on the conditions that you're experiencing. And that's where it's a trust, isn't it? A sense of trust and confidence in this awareness. So then everything becomes a Dhamma, you know, the highs, the lows, the good times, the bad times, the successes, failures, praise and blame, all the rest. It's part of it, you know. It's the changingness of the sankharas, and one's refuge is in awareness rather than in the role or the becoming or the achievement or the feeling of despair, like I haven't gotten anywhere. So in the three refuges, Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, this is how, you know, like the Sangha then, this entity, this form here, conscious entity, And I claim, this is me, Ajahn Sumedho. And I can give you my biographical statistics and my achievements. And then in intimate moments, I might confess a few weaknesses and failures. But in terms of the awareness, that's not Ajahn Sumedho. And that awareness is a unity, isn't it? That awareness is oneness, because it's not two. It's not like mine. I can't claim it as personal achievement. As soon as I do claim, you know, I'm a really very, very mindful after all these years, I'm really succeeded at mindfulness practices, then that's the personality operating again. But that drops away, the need to claim it or identify with it seems pointless, seems something you don't have any inclination to do anymore. You don't, the idea of becoming an enlightened person or something that sounds totally ridiculous. Becoming a stream enterer or becoming an arahant sounds totally ridiculous to me, because that's not the way it is. And my personality is never, you know, it's never going to become anything but what it is. You know, I can't make my personality into an arahant unless I want to delude myself and go around pretending I'm an arahant as a person. But that would create more problems, wouldn't it? And suffering. It seems so such a foolish thing. You know, it has no kind of attraction, because the faith is in the awareness rather than in the title or the attainment or the feeling of having attained or feeling of not having attained, as through the way we think, our personality habit. So in terms of practice, and that the it's very simple, very direct. It doesn't seem like much of anything. In terms of values, how we, you know, we want to, the way we think, you know, like attaining nibbana or becoming an arahant, things like this. These are like attainments. These are very high attainments, because of the limitation of thought. And then thinking is linear. It is you know, it goes, you know, good, better, best, bad, worse, worse. And so it you know, and arahant is the best, and a bhutucana is you know, the lowest, and the hell spirit, or the preta, you know. We can put these in, you know, in terms of conventional forms, but then that's always the limitation of form, concept, language. To recognize that awareness is transcending language. Language can come from that awareness, but if we attach to our ideas and our thoughts and our views and opinions, then without seeing, you know, that the attachment, then we're operating out of avijja, ignorance of the way it is. So just another encouragement to you know, to trust in this. And you find, you know, we find ways of, or skillful means or upayas of learning the way we are. You know, we also have the ability to develop means that make to allow us to see this more clearly, such as my listening to myself, listening to my personality. You know, I let it talk to me. Ajahn Sumedho goes on, and I listen, but I know it. I know that I know what it is. So there's a knowing, and there's no need to attach to it. And there's you know, sometimes that's all right to be Ajahn Sumedho conventionally, but it's not an attachment, an identity anymore. So then this is a sense of refuge. You see the value of this Bhuttang Sarenangacchami, Dhammang Sarenangacchami, Sanghang Sarenangacchami. Even though this is a Pali language, you know, it's pointing at something very direct, very important to, you know, it's an awakening, learning to trust. Refuge is that which you can trust. And which you can't define, you can't control it. It's through awareness. Then the teachings of the Buddha, we call like the Dhamma teachings and so forth, they're pointing to the way things are. They're not defining things. The teachings of the Buddha are not definitions. They're not, you know, they're just merely pointing out dukkhas like this. The origin of dukkha is like this, the cessation of dukkha is like this, the Eightfold Path is like this. It's not trying to define and bind you to some kind of doctrinal positioning, but pointing always here and now at the way it is. So these teachings then are to be used for awareness, not things to be, you know, attached to or rejected. But you know, in this tradition, this is the conventions we have to use. So learn how to use them. You know, learn how to, when you're with a piano teacher, you learn to play the piano, not the violin. learn how to use the teaching, the tradition. You know, not attach to it, not identify. So, after this is a reflection.